from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Good morning, everybody. Saturday morning. What is it? 2:10 as we get it from Howard Eskin, Mike Sielski, Glenn. Mike Sielski, Glenn Macnow. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Glenn. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Oh, so much to get to today, Mike Sielski. A couple good guests as we move along. Alex Coffey, the terrific baseball beat writer for the Inquirer, is going to join us at 11, right?
Correct. Mike,
okay. And Phil Martelli, one of our favorites who can talk about anything, is going to join us before the end of the show. And, of course, we lead you into Phillies baseball, 1 o'clock across the pond. 1 o'clock start here. What did I make it? 6 o'clock?
7?
7. So 5 or 6 hours there? Six?
I think it's 6.
Right,
it's 5.
Anyway,
what
do we care?
It's not America. Why do we even
bother ourselves with this?
Yes.
That's right. But let's start with 5 questions for Mike, which is something we've been doing. And there are some real issues going on this week. And one is, on what was supposed to be a very quiet week of minicamp for the Philadelphia Eagles, Jalen Hurts ended it very curiously. I want to play the cut here. And then you tell me, do we have an issue going on here? Here you go.
You know, Nick being open-minded to change up every, you know, the offense like he has. I mean, what's that say about him?
I mean, it's a great question. I don't know that I know the answer to it.
What have you seen from him as far as doing that?
I think he's just, you know, he's been a, you know, great, and you know, the messages he's delivering to the team. He's trying to be very intentional in what he's saying. And yeah.
This is one of the easiest questions a player is going to get asked, and it's, and he blew it.
He did.
So I will ask you, Mike Sielski, what do you make of that?
I make one of two things. Either there's an actual issue between Nick Sirianni and Jalen Hurts, or Jalen Hurts needs to prepare or be prepared better for the questions, the obvious questions that he's going to be asked anytime he deals with the media. As you said, Glenn, this is the easiest of easy questions. How is your coach adjusted to having new coordinators underneath him? It's not a new issue. It's not something that came out of the blue. The question was asked by Martin Frank of the Wilmington, Delaware News Journal. It's an appropriate question. It's an obvious question. And it was relevant going back to the last game of the season, Glenn, where Jalen got asked about Nick Sirianni's future and botched that one as well. So, look, as I said, either this is Jalen Hurts not answering and dealing with the media in a smart way, and maybe the Eagles need to prepare him better, or this is really something between him and the head coach.
I think it's more the second than the first.
And then
how could you be unprepared? He's been around the league now for 4 years. He graduated. I know he went to the Nick Saban school of, you know, we're all rat poison.
Yeah.
But this wasn't a trap question. This was just an easy one. And what it may say to me is that Nick, it's not that Nick is irrelevant, but that certainly Nick is no longer the key guy in the offense, and that it's Kellen Moore's offense now. It's 95% new, as Jalen Hurts said, and that rather than say, how's Nick adjusting? Nick's out. Nick's not really relevant. Jalen kind of fumfed around and couldn't figure out an appropriate answer. That's my best guess. But again, I'm doing is guessing based on that horrible answer that he gave.
Yeah.
Which left it open to whatever interpretation you want it to be.
We'll get to this later in the show, but this is not the first time that Jalen has had the opportunity to really throw some strong public support behind Nick and has not done it. And that's concerning if you're Nick Sirianni in particular, because in any NFL organization, with maybe one or two exceptions, the franchise quarterback, as George Costanza would say, Glenn, has the hand. And Jalen Hurts has the hand here. Nick Sirianni does not.
Are these male model hands you're referring to?
Look at them. They're beautiful.
Yeah, I don't get it. And people can say, oh, you guys are reaching for, you guys are creating something. But he walked it right into the twilight zone of what the hell was that about?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll revisit that and more Eagles. But let's go across the pond to Mike Sielski. The Phillies are in London today playing the Mets. 1:10 start our time, as we said, and then a second one tomorrow. Now, you and I have agreed that the NFL playing in Brazil and whatever other foreign destinations they go to is essentially a money grab by the league.
Yes.
Which does nothing to benefit fans, right? Eagle fans get right. nothing out of it except for those who can afford to go to Brazil. Hey, have a great time. Do you feel the same way about Major League Baseball playing in London?
I don't. Maybe that makes me a hypocrite, but I think the difference is one game in Sao Paulo, Brazil is 1/17 of an NFL team's regular season, which is a really substantial percentage of an NFL team's regular season. This is two games out of 162. It's not as big a deal. It's not as much of a hardship. It's not as egregious. It's not as much of a money grab. It's a chance for baseball to spread itself out culturally. I have really no problem with it.
Yeah. I mean, you buy season tickets to an Eagles game, you get 8 regular season games or 9 regular season games, and they all mean a lot. Those are events. You plan your life around those things. They're huge. It is indifferent. Like, who's going to 81 baseball games?
Yeah, 8 or 9 games for the Phillies is a homestand. It's not an entire regular season schedule. So moving one of those games out, if you're an Eagles fan, it really is a hardship. And I think the NFL doesn't do enough to accommodate and take care of its core fans. This is different.
The NFL doesn't give a damn about its core fans.
Of course not.
The NFL has showed that in so many ways. The only thing I will say against this is the Phillies are going so well and they're in such a great role that I don't want anything that could possibly do it. And I don't want it to be that a month from now we're looking at like, well, prior to London, the Phillies were 4-19. And since then, well, they've gone 6-10.
Yeah, they
hit the... I don't want anything that could possibly hex the thing.
They hit the pubs hard for those couple of days and it just transformed the season.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to it.
We'll see. Too.
It's supposed to be a very small park, easy home run park.
Yeah, it is. And that's been kind of the history with Major League games in London. So we'll see how it goes.
Ranger on the mound today. Keep that ball down. All right. Question number 3. This one gets serious. So a Padres infielder, who to be honest with you, I never heard of, although he was in the major leagues last year. He was with the White Sox. He was in the American League last year. Tucupita Marcano was banned for life this week for placing 231 bets on Major League Baseball through a legal sports book. He was the first active player in more than a century to get a lifetime ban.
Yep.
Pete Rose, of course, was a manager when it occurred. 3 other players were suspended for a year in this particular case. And this follows last month, the NBA banning Jontay Porter for life. And what now appears to be, that one's a scandal. The U.S. attorney in that case, the U.S. attorney in Brooklyn, said that he thought that that had, quote, a corrupting influence on 2 games. He was
basically saying point shaving.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was related to prop bets. You know, is he going to take a 3-point attempt or not? Things like that. Okay. Right. So, are we Mike Sielski? Well, let me back up a second. Legalized sports betting is now everywhere.
Yes.
It's sponsored by the leagues. It is sponsored by the teams. It is sponsored by this station. It is everywhere. You cannot avoid it. You turn on your computer. Hello, there you go. Is this the tip of the corruption iceberg that we are currently seeing?
Yes, it is. And one of the biggest aspects of this corruption, Glenn, that nobody talks about, quite literally nobody talks about, is the fact that very few media outlets talk about it for the very reasons you're talking about, because they are financially tied up in the gambling itself. A player got...
And we're just the guys to do it.
Right. A major...
Hey, I'm retiring in a month.
This is true, yes. A Major League Baseball player got banned for life related to gambling. When this happened with Pete Rose 35 years ago, it was the story that everyone was talking about. Now, Pete Rose is an all-time great baseball player and a cultural figure, but the principle is the same. Yet, this doesn't get talked about on talk radio. We don't write about it on websites and newspapers, ESPN and the major sports networks don't talk about this because they have so much money tied up in the gambling industry now that they can't afford to be seen to be biting the hand that now feeds everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a major, major scandal. And it's something I think you and I feel kind of incumbent and almost like a moral need to talk about it because it's a big deal.
It's a big deal. Listen, I have been in favor of legalized sports betting. I actually placed the first legal sports bet in Delaware when they made it legal a couple of years ago.
Okay.
We did it as a promotion through the station, right? So I can't tell you that I am against legalized sports betting because I think I'm generally... People should have the right to do what they want to do, more or less, as long as you're not hurting anybody. And, you know, I sell beer and I think people should be able to smoke pot and I think people should be able to bet on games.
Yep.
But there is this insidious side effect that it now certainly has infected the sports themselves. And I agree with you that it's going to get worse. I think the Jante Porter one is the one that could really happen a lot because prop bets are the thing.
Exactly.
I think most... Now, the players who got suspended here did not bet against their teams. The only one who actually bet on his team was that one guy, Marcano. The other guys bet on other games. You know who's the poor guy in this? The pitcher, Michael Kelly from Oakland, bet $99 2 years ago on three games through illegal sports bet. And that poor guy suspended for
they can make an example
of him.
He's
like, what did I do? And I will tell you, I think in baseball, some of the diligence right now comes after the Ohtani case where they dodged a bullet. And I'm not sure everybody's entirely in total belief that Major League Baseball didn't hide something there and that they kind of covered up for Ohtani. I'm of the mind that that may have happened a little bit. But this is going to get worse. This is going to be a regular story, and I don't know how they get the genie back in the bottle here.
The guardrails are gone. That's
we're going to use every cliche. The genie in the bottle, the guardrails are gone. How do you unscramble the egg, Mike?
I don't know. Two in the hands worth, one in the hands, two in the bush, something like that. I don't know. Yeah, it's a big deal, and I think it's good that we talk about it. I think we should continue to talk about it. Because, as you said, this is not over by a long shot. It's going to get worse.
It's going to get worse. One of the kids was a Phillies farmhand who I'm not really familiar with. But anyway, all right, we mentioned that. Let's go to question number. Speaking of things that we never talk about, the world went crazy this week over Caitlin Clark, or at least a couple of hard fouls she took in the WNBA. The Chicago Tribune, that bastion of journalism, wrote an editorial. Outside of a sporting contest, this would have been seen as assault.
Yeah, which describes every NFL, NBA, and Major League Baseball game ever played.
Pretty much. There are some who say, hey, she's the meal ticket. This is why you're flying first class. Come on, leave her alone. There are others in the league who, you know, see her as a rookie, certainly getting over-glamorized, getting too much press. They've been ignored. They're going to make an example out of her. I would be naive to say there's probably not some degree of a racial component there. She's the great white savior, etc. But mostly I think they want to see if she's tough enough to handle it. You, by the way, wrote a very good column on this. So my question for you is this much ado about nothing?
No, I think it's something. You have everything that gets people riled up in our society nowadays tied up in this story. There's race, there's gender, there's the media, there's journalism, there's sports. It's all in this gigantic stew. And we could take this conversation in any number of different ways. The outcry over the foul, the deliberate cheap shot, dirty play that Kennedy Carter inflicted on Caitlin Clark is interesting to me for the very reason you cited, which is you get people now who don't follow sports regularly weighing in on sports.
Yeah, look at that. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Can you believe they're doing that to her as if there has never been another dirty play in the history of basketball? It shouldn't have happened. Carter should have been suspended. But the idea that WNBA players were going to treat the new star rookie with kid gloves was never going to happen. These are highly competitive athletes. They're going to knock her around and test her mettle and see how she responds.
People whom I either follow or know or follow on social media, whom I respect, who played the game. One I know, Rex Chapman. One our pal Mike Frieswick.
Yep.
Both said, welcome to the league, rookie, more or less. I mean, Rex Chapman posted a video of Michael Jordan going up for his first NBA dunk and Jeff Ruland flattening him.
Yep. Yep, knocked him. It was like Jordan had jumped into a trampoline wall. Yeah. He rebounded back so far.
And that's what it is. And, you know, I mean, within limits, I'm okay with it. Hey, kid, toughen up. By the way, she scored 30 last night.
She did. Look, she's the gateway for a lot of people who weren't following women's basketball to start following women's basketball. There's going to be more attention on the sport. And the last thing I'll say about this, Glenn, people express misinformed or dumb opinions about the NFL and the NBA and the NHL and Major League Baseball all the time.
215-592-9494 if you want to do so.
With
what are you trying to say?
With the increased attention that the WNBA is getting now, there are going to be people who say silly and dumb things. To a certain degree, the WNBA and the people who follow it and love it are going to kind of have to get used to
it. But do you agree with the Mike Vrieswijk, Rex Chapman thing, which is she's a rookie. Obviously, she is getting all the glamour, and they're going to make her pay.
Yes.
Okay.
They said they were going to make her pay before she played her first game, Diana Taurasi, and multiple players had said she's going to be in for a rough adjustment, and she is.
And she seems to be handling it. All right. Question number five. Let's throw a little hockey in here. Big newser this week, Dan Hilford and Keith Jones. By the way, I think I can promo this now.
Yeah, let's do it.
Coming up later this month, Mike and I are delighted that Dan Hilferty, who is the head of Comcast when it comes to the Flyers, and John Middleton, the owner of the Phillies, are going to come in studio for an hour. And we're going to talk to them ostensibly about the project that they have in South Philly involving the stadium and the arena plan. But also, gee, I think when we have those guys in, we'll talk about the team some.
Maybe.
So that's coming up later this month. We're really looking forward to an hour with those two big timers. All right. So Hilferty and Jones held a newser. Essentially said, don't get your hopes up too much about us making any big-time playoff runs anytime soon. This is going to be a long process, so even with all the good feelings around the franchise, Mike Sielski, is the fan base prepared? Will the fan base accept them missing the postseason again?
They need to, because I don't think they will make the postseason. I'd be surprised if they did. Will they accept it? I think people are going to start to get impatient. I think people were already impatient, and the fact that Hilferty and Jonesy and Danny Briere, and to a certain degree John Tortorella, have handled the public relations aspect of the rebuild better than their predecessors did — they couldn't handle it any worse — has helped the franchise out a lot. It doesn't change the timeline of how long it will take for them to get to be a contender again. They are hoping that Matvei Mishkov, this big prospect, comes over sooner rather than later, but there's no guarantee or no real knowledge of when he might.
That would be the game changer.
It would be. They still have a draft or two at least that they have to go through to collect more talent. They still have young players in the system who have to get better and improve and show that they can perform at the highest level. It's going to take time, and I think, again, just from an image standpoint, Hilferty and Jonesy are smart to downplay expectations. I just think the fan base is so hungry for playoff hockey that if the Flyers don't make the playoffs again this season, people are going to be really, really disappointed.
Okay. I think I anticipate a little more patience from the fan base, and think if they see improvement as the year goes on, they'll buy in and see a tough, hungry team. We'll judge it. We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, okay. I wonder about that. I wonder after the 8-game losing streak at the end of last season if people go, maybe these guys don't know what they're doing.
Maybe. Mishkov could be the game changer. That's
absolutely
the thing. If he comes, and Jonesy was asked about it and very adeptly said, I don't know.
No, the Flyers have needed for a long time a player who makes them part of the water cooler conversation. Yep. They need Eric Lindros or something
They need somebody who people are going to buy the jersey.
Exactly. Yeah. And they haven't had that in forever, and Mishkov could be that guy.
Let's go to the phones. John in Manayunk starts us today. How are you, John?
Hey, how you doing, Glenn?
All right.
Yeah, it's amazing you're talking about Caitlin Clark, because last night I was sitting here kind of bored, you know, and I was like, I never saw before because of her being a WNBA.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, there is a game on. I put on the Fever and the Wizards, and I was watching it, and I was half watching, and I was going to watch a movie on my computer on the side, and I got stuck to it. It was a great game, and she's a great player, and she seems to be handling it. She's talking trash. And everything. So she, you know, she knows what it's about. But if you remember,
John, how old are you?
I'm like 62.
Okay. How many WNBA games have you watched in your life?
The first one I ever watched.
There you go.
You know what it is, John? Her game And I wrote this in the column Glenn mentioned. Her game narrows the gap between the way people look at women's basketball and the way people look at men's, because she plays so much like Steph Curry, who's the most popular player, men's player, in the last 10 years. And she looks like he does on the court, and so people are intrigued and interested.
Yeah, like a quick relative comment. Like, do you remember, like, when, like, you know, rookies break into a leg? Remember when Bryce Harper first came up with the Nationals?
Yes.
And Cole Hamels, like, he just drilled him, and he just took it. He went to first base, and that's part of the business.
Yeah, and she did exactly the same thing.
Absolutely right. What do you got on the Phils?
On the Phillies, I still think they need to pick up a right-handed outfielding back, you know, so in a trade or some kind. Maybe they can platoon with Marsh or something like that.
I think there's a very good – thanks for the call, man. And I think there's a very good chance of that. The trade deadline's still a ways away. They are obviously have no emergency need to do it. Maybe Merrifield picks up. Castellanos has shown might do
here
it.
Here and there, yeah.
Yeah, Pache doesn't show me that he's going to do anything. So, yeah. And the good news is, if you're looking to pick up a position at the trade deadline, right-handed hitting outfield is about the easiest one to find.
Yeah. They're not looking to improve themselves as much as they're looking to fortify a few soft, weak, relatively weak areas, and a right-handed bat off the bench would be at the top of the list.
215-592-9494. All right, coming up, Mike, you know, again, I'm retiring in a month.
I heard.
I know. So, all right. Okay. I'm trying to do this fine line between being maudlin and self-aggrandizing and just kind of doing a show.
Hey, man, I get it. And we're doing this segment every week, and it's a lot of fun. It's good to look back.
So this will be my favorite and least favorite people to deal with. Well, not athletes,
yeah,
coaches,
I was gonna
those
say,
people.
Am I on
I'll
the
do
list?
My WIP favorite and least favorite. I'll do that one.
Remember when we talked yesterday and you had? I told you to scratch Dan Wilson off your worst people list?
Yeah, there you go. So I'll tell you about some of the encounters I've had over the years that I've enjoyed, and maybe one or two I have not. Mike Sielski, Glenn Mack now. A 94 WIP. Boy, and over the years, I got to tell you, there's no company that I have enjoyed speaking at for more than Gaida. And you've heard me just, I think it's been 20 years that I've been repping for them. And I do it because I think they have integrity. I think I do it because I know how they deal with people. I've recommended people to them over the years. And every single time I hear from that person that it went great. The value is there. The workmanship is there. The tagline is Go Gaida. And I will tell you that whatever your home improvement needs are, I honestly, sincerely suggest you go Gaida with the great people at Gaida Door and Window. To help get your project started, Gaida is offering 20% off all windows and doors while allowing you to start your project with no money down and up to 3 years to pay them off interest-free. Yep, 20% instant savings with the luxury of paying off your project interest-free for up to 36 months. Restrictions apply, offers for a limited time, so what are you waiting for? It's time you finally go Gaida. Call today. Tell them I sent you. Schedule a free in-home estimate at 1-877-GO-GAIDA or visit them at GoGaida.com. That's Go, GUIDA.com.
3-2 pitch, swing, and a well-hit ball to deep center field. Nixon back. It's out of here. Home run, Lenny Dykstra. And the Phils have taken a 4-3 lead here in the 10th. Number two in this series for the Dew. The only hits given up by Mark Wohlers.
They tried both of them off Wohlers. Hit that ball over the deep right center field fence just below the scoreboard.
Lenny Dykstra has given the Phillies a 4-3 lead.
You had to pick that highlight, did you?
You know, on the one hand, it's wonderful to hear Harry Callis and Richie Ashbury's voices again.
Yes.
On the other hand, Glenn,
yeah,
it set up this segment perfectly.
Oh, yeah, perfectly, because this is when I was going to talk about my favorite and least favorite people that I've dealt with over the years, and we'll get to which side of the ledger Lenny Dykstra fell on in a little bit. When I was at the Inquirer, I dealt with players more directly. I spent more time in the locker room. And I'll just tell you, some of the best guys I dealt with over the years, Reggie White was great. I covered the NFL player strike in 1987 and spent a lot of time with Reggie. And listen, we certainly differed on a lot of issues, but he was a genuinely great man. Cole Hamels, Dale Murphy was here a short time, but boy, he was a gentleman. Connor Barwin. John LeClair, I did charity work with John LeClair, just a very solid guy. I always felt sympathy for Lindros because I always felt Lindros just wanted to be one of the guys and could never be that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll give you my Lindros story. I have two Lindros stories.
Okay.
First one, 1990, 91, I'm with the Inquirer and I went up to visit my parents in Buffalo and I'm trying to figure out how can I stay longer than a weekend. and so I was hearing about this kid playing junior hockey in Oshawa who they say was going to be the next one. And so there really hadn't been anything written down here about him. Unless you read Hockey News, you didn't know who Eric Lindros was. And I told the Inquirer, I'm going to go up and watch this kid play. So I drove up to Oshawa and watched him play. I think he had a goal and an assist. He just was bigger than everybody and dominated the game. And I interviewed him along with his agent, a guy named Don Meehan. We're talking about the NHL and where he's going to go. It was clear already he was going to be the first pick the next year. And he had strong opinions. He was, what, 17 or whatever at the time.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, Winnipeg. I don't want to go to Winnipeg. He was very clear about, I mean, mocking Winnipeg.
Wow.
And Quebec came up, and it was a small market. He didn't want to play for a small market. He didn't want to play for a loser. And I got the sense that he didn't want to play in Canada other than maybe Toronto. He didn't want to play in Montreal. And he asked me about the Flyers, who were pretty bad at the time. Those are the years they were missing the playoffs.
Yeah, they missed the playoffs 5 years in a row.
Right, and how he could end up here and what might happen. And anyway, I'm very proud to be one of the first American reporters who wrote about Lindros. The other story came draft day, the 1991 NHL draft. The Inquirer sent me to Montreal, the Montreal Forum, to cover the draft, which was pretty cool. I wasn't a hockey writer, but I got to do it. So I'm in Montreal at the Forum covering it for the Inquirer. Lindros had already signaled that he doesn't want to play for Quebec and he's up and what's going to happen. And all of a sudden, I see down on the floor of the Forum where all the teams are, Jay Snyder is arguing with this guy. It turned out to be the Quebec GM.
Yep.
And Jay Snyder's face is red and he's arguing. And I had a pretty good working relationship at the time. Jay Snyder, son of Ed Snyder, was running the Flyers in those years. And so I did something that you probably weren't supposed to do, which is I just walked down onto the floor. And security was pretty lax, right? So I walked down to the floor. It's like, what's going on? He said, you won't believe this. Marcel, this guy traded Eric Lindros to us. And then 30 minutes later, he traded him to the Rangers. He's ours. He's not the Rangers. And he's going nuts. And I was the only person who had this story.
Oh, my God.
But here's the thing.
There's no 24-hour news then.
I wrote for a daily newspaper that wasn't coming out for another 18 hours.
Yeah.
I had no association at the time with WIP. There was no social media. There was no, hey, put it on the Inquirer website as quick as you can. And I foolishly am thinking, maybe I could be the only, I'll write this up and maybe nobody else will have it before tomorrow morning. Well, a few hours later, everything blew up.
But
I had like the greatest scoop in the world for 3 hours and couldn't do anything with it. All right.
And that's how the internet was invented.
Yeah. Stay on hockey. One of my best friends now is a guy who I booed from the seats in Buffalo as a kid. Well, I didn't boo him. I booed his teammates. I respected him. Bernie Perron.
Yeah.
And I've come to know Bernie since I've been here. And I'll just give you one story. One day when I'm doing afternoons, I was doing it with Anthony, and Anthony was off, and I was looking for something goofy to do. It was slow time of the year, and I always did the food hunt. So we had a one-day chocolate cake hunt, because Bernie Perron always loved chocolate cake.
Okay.
And whenever I would do the food hunts, like we'd do ribs, I'd say, what do you guys want to do next year? And Bernie would be like, chocolate cake. So I would do one-day chocolate cake, and I got like eight of the best chocolate cakes around the area, brought them into the studio, and my son, who was in medical school, said, like, yeah, I'm taking the day off. I'm going to join you guys.
Oh, wow.
So he hung with us, and my son Alex and Bernie got along really well, and Bernie's talking to him, when do you graduate medical school? Alex said, 2 years. He said, when you graduate, I will come. I was like, okay. 2 years later, I'm at Wing Bowl.
Your son graduated at Wing Bowl?
No, my son's a couple months from graduation.
Okay.
And Bernie's there, and out of nowhere, Bernie says, like, your son, he's going to be graduating soon, right? Like, this is like 2 years later. How did he remember that? I said, but yeah. He said, okay, I'm coming. problem is I only get 8 tickets for graduation and like, you know, kind of the grandparents.
Yeah. Which grandparent are you kicking out?
So we went out to dinner. Bernie and a friend and Alex and I all went out to a great dinner.
That's awesome.
And Bernie is now one of my dear friends. I love Bernie. I love Jeannie. Mm-hmm. We had him on. You wrote that great piece on him a couple weeks ago. Bernie's the nicest superstar I ever met.
Yeah, he is the genuine article in that regard. Right. Absolutely.
Up there with him is Charles Barkley. Mm. And I got two Charles Barkley stories. One is years and years ago, and I know I've told these on the air, so just if you've heard them, you know, come back in 3 minutes. There used to be a restaurant on Lancaster Avenue called Al E. Gators, which is like a TGI Fridays kind of place, very family friendly, and they had like this alligator mascot who would walk around and scare the kids and so on. And I'm there. My kids are young, so this is a while ago. My kids are probably 10 and 7, and now they're both men with kids of their own. And they had a bar area there, and Barkley is in the bar with his wife and a couple of friends, just, you know, enjoying a drink quietly, minding his own business. And there's a woman who is hosting a birthday party for her son, sees Barkley there and comes over to him and says, she's very polite, I want to bother you, but, you know, it's my son's birthday. If you could just come over and say hi to the boys, it would be such a thrill for
you.
I'm watching this whole thing from where I'm sitting. I'm watching this thing transpire. And Barkley goes, "Where's that boy? Where is he?" And like, all of a sudden, he's this loud, effusive, demonstrative guy, and he comes over to the tables, and the birthday kid, he gives him noogies, and he's talking, and long story short, 20 minutes later, Charles Barkley is sitting at that table wearing one of those pointy little birthday hats, singing with all these little boys.
Wow.
I think, you know, kid must have been about 8, right? And so there's like 10 or 12 little boys, and they're all looking, this is a visual, but you can get, they're all looking at Barkley like,
right.
And I'm looking at his wife at the bar. She's like, you know, tapping her fingers, like, when's he coming back? But just what a, genuinely great thing. Here's the other one. Similar story. We went down with the station when the NCAA finals were in New Orleans a couple of years ago. It might have been Atlanta. I don't know. We went down a couple of years to the NCAA finals. And my flight back to Philadelphia afterward, turns out he was getting on the same flight. And so we kind of see each other in the gate, like, hey, how you doing? How you doing? And he's arguing something with Jim Gray.
Okay.
Okay, who's also there. And I don't remember what they were arguing. It's not important. And a woman comes by to ask Charles for his autograph. 60-year-old woman, a little petite, gray-haired woman. And he says to her, "What's your name?" And she goes, "I'm Phyllis from Nebraska." He goes, "Well, Phyllis from Nebraska, Jim Gray is arguing that college players shouldn't, whatever, get paid or whatever. Right. And I think he's crazy. What do you think?" And she goes, "I think I agree with you." And he's like, "See? You see, Jim?" And so, and somebody else comes over, and Charles is like, "Well, Mike, what do you think about this?" And all of a sudden, Charles is like conducting this entire thing where he's bringing in everybody and just, you know, welcoming everybody. And Jim Gray wants nothing to do with this, by the way.
Yeah,
Jim Gray is like,
"Yeah, I can't believe I have to
talk to the rabble."
Yeah, communicate with the proletariat.
And Barkley's just great with people. And those are a couple experiences I had with him that's great. All right.
So, real quick, Dave Koski, the longtime media relations and marketing guy for the Sixers, had what I think is the best line about Charles Barkley, which is that most pro athletes are jerks who want you to think they're good guys. Charles is a great guy who sometimes wants people to think he's a jerk.
Yeah, he's just great. He's great. All right, so the guy who's not a great guy is Lenny. Is Lenny Dykstra, you played the clip, is the worst guy I've dealt with. And by the way, I know that Lenny has people who listen to this show, and so I'm going to hear from this on social media and so on, and I don't give a damn. Listen, Lenny was a great player when he was here. His 1993, he should have been the MVP, not Barry Bonds. So there was always that other side. And I did have a personal experience with Lenny, and compared to some of the things that put him in jail, this is pretty trivial.
Yeah.
But it happened, and I've thought about it ever since, because I'm not happy with my role in it. And it's this. It's August 1993, and the Inquirer, the Phillies were going for it, and so they, all hands on deck, they sent me down to Atlanta to help cover the pennant race. And I'm standing outside the hotel going to, about to get a cab to the stadium. Lenny comes out. And so we end up sharing a cab together. And for the record, he paid. So, all right, let that be in the record. the cabbie was an older guy, and he was delighted when we got in the cab, when Dykstra gets in the cab. He's a huge fan, and he said that he kept a baseball bat in a sleeve on the front seat, and whenever a big-time player would come in the cab, he would ask him for his signature. He had the Sharpie there, and he wanted to give it to his grandson as like this memento, and he gave it to us, and there's, you know, David Cohn's and Greg Maddux's autograph and Andre Dawson, like all these great players. Mm-hmm. And so he hands it over, and Dykstra takes the bat and takes the Sharpie, and Dykstra signs. And then Dykstra looks at me and gives me this conspiratorial grin. Mm-hmm. Not the first word I was going to use for the grin, but
right.
You got it.
Yep.
And as he hands it back over, he shows it to me. And rather than sign his name, he signed Suck a blank.
Wow.
Yeah. And the drivers, the notice, it's just the thing, and he's, you know, the bat's back in the thing, and the driver's like, oh, thank you. Oh, my grandson's going to love it.
Oh, jeez.
And I'm telling you, I'm still mad at myself because I just didn't do anything, and I was taken aback, and and then we get out of the cab, and they're like, hey, we got him, didn't we?
Oh.
And I'm thinking, I was part of this. And I'm telling you, 30 years later, I'm ashamed that I didn't tell Dykstra off or knock on the window of the cabbie or whatever. I still feel lousy. And I know that Dykstra, like 3 minutes later, had moved on to like his next prank.
Yeah.
So there you go. Yeah. So I'm going to end with an up note.
Okay.
And I know I'm going long here.
That's
I apologize.
All right.
I think I mentioned Charlie Manuel before.
Yep.
And I think like a lot of other people in the media, I was very tough on him at first. Bill Conlon used to call him Elmer Befuddled. And truth be told, I think a lot of us were bigots against his Southern accent, his kind of bumpkin demeanor.
Which is, you know, fitting because nobody in Philadelphia has a weird accent, you know?
Yeah. Turns out he was really smart, is really smart. I mean, this guy got offered a chance to go to Penn when he was a young man, had to turn it down because he was taking care of his siblings after his father died. And I learned so much later doing a weekly show with Charlie and Anthony at Ponzio's Diner. God, I love Ponzio's Diner. I got to get back to Ponzio's. Anyway, we learned how he ticked and we learned what was important for a manager. And we just learned so much. And the other thing we learned is that Charlie, if you recall, he wasn't great at news conferences, right?
His answers, was in a lot of them, and no, he was not.
Right, and I mean, even to write up those quotes was a challenge. But what he was great at was storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And it took us about a month of those shows before we realized, just set him up and let him go.
Mm-hmm.
So when he talked about playing in Japan when he was in a room full of geisha girls and what happened there, or getting hitting lessons from Ted Williams and that stuff, God, he was great. He's a great man. He was a great guy. And I learned so much from Charlie, but I just learned that your initial impressions can be wrong.
I think your experience with him is a microcosm of the entire region's experience with him. It remains to this day, Glenn, the greatest reversal in public opinion about any sports figure I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Because he was not well-liked and not respected when he started out by anybody. And he struggled, to express himself publicly in a way that gave people confidence that he could do the job. And now he is as beloved as any figure in Philadelphia.
And deservedly so.
Absolutely.
God bless that man. All right, well, there you go. That's some of it. So thank you
for
indulging.
I'm looking forward to seeing the posts on social media from Lenny Dykstra and his minions.
It's going to happen. All right, whatever. 215-592-9494. Mike and Glenn on 94 WIP. With Mike Sielski, I'm Glenn Mack. Now, coming up just about 10 minutes, we're going to check in with Alex Coffey over in London. Oh, she's not in London, excuse me.
She is not.
But she covers the Phillies. We'll talk to her about all that's going on with them. Let's get a few calls in here. Robin Pensauken is with us. Hey there, Rob.
Hey, Glenn. I wish you, like all of us, a great retirement, and may it be very similar to Ray Dittinger's, where we drive down the road and keep hearing you.
Can I tell you something? And I was with Ray this week. Ray and I did an event this week, and everybody said, like, Ray, for a guy retired, you're on a lot. I love Ray, and I love WIP. I will not be on as frequently as Ray. I will not never be on, but I'm...
No, I'm going to have you on the show once in a great while.
Once in a great while is exactly when I can want to come on. But thank you, Rob. What's on your mind?
I debate with one of my friends about the WNBA's ratings, and he accuses me, he lives in Portland, accuses me of things that are not my personality. I explained to him with Caitlin Clark in the NCAA finals. I said, well, it's like Monet Davis. I took off from work to watch Monet Davis tip mm-hmm. the Little League World Series, haven't watched it. On Sunday, I came up with a great argument and called him right away. Sunday afternoon, I turn on the UFL, and I said, who is going to watch? I love football. I get depressed when the NFL ends. But I cannot get myself to ever watch spring football. And no matter what they promote, no one's going to watch it, ever. I will bank on it.
You're talking about the UFL or the WNBA?
The UFL, like the WNBA, it's just they can say it has to be promoted, advertised. Nah, we're not going to watch spring football. I can't tell you why.
Well, here's the thing. And thanks for the call. And also, thank you for the kind words. And Mike, okay, never mind. We got it. I think with Caitlin Clark, people will check out the WNBA.
Yes.
And then whether they come back a second time depends on whether they like it.
Yeah, I think her development will have a lot to do with that. If she becomes the same kind of figure in the WNBA that she became at the University of Iowa in college basketball, where she is the best and most famous player in the sport, then that might draw more eyeballs.
Okay, it didn't work with previous big names.
Right.
Why is she different?
Well, like I said in the first segment, I think watching her play looks more like watching
Steph Curry yeah.
than watching, name your other WNBA player, Asia Wilson, looks like Joel Embiid. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and the big man, big woman is not the attraction.
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's get Steve in Westchester. We'll talk some Eagles defense. What's up, Steve?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we got you.
We're good, Steve.
Yeah, I know the Eagles need a lot of help on defense, defensive line, the backers, and the secondary. I wanted to ask you guys what you thought was most important.
I think, to be honest, Steve, it starts, and this is such a cliche, but it's true, it starts up front. And I'm concerned about the pass rush, Glenn.
Yeah, yeah. This kid, the kid they got from the Jets.
Bryce Huff.
I always call him Bryce Hall.
Yeah.
This kid Bryce Huff has to be good.
Yeah, and he may very well be, but there's uncertainty as to whether he will be.
Yeah, and you're replacing Fletcher Cox out there on the defensive line, right?
Yeah, and Brandon Graham is back, but he's another year older.
Right.
And you don't know what you have in Nolan Smith. And the defensive tackles are young, and they wore down at the end of last year. There's a lot of questions along that defensive line, and their defense, even under Vic Fangio, is going to be predicated on getting to the quarterback.
All right, so we brought up Brandon Graham. An interesting thing to say at minicamp this week. I'm going to have you interpret what he's talking about here.
We got a good coach in Clint, and I really think that last year we just didn't. That's what we didn't have. We didn't have all the right coaches in the right position, you know, I would say. And, you know, you could just see the guys just truly believing in what we got going on. And I'm excited for the young guys that just came in and new rookies coming in. They really going to get a good shot at a good taste of what it really is to be in the NFL.
You said that thing about the right coaches. How early do you know that?
You just noticed little stuff last year on certain stuff you wasn't on the same page about. Just here and there, it will pop up, but it popped up in a big way that last game. And it's just like, anything I learned, you always want to make sure that we just had a proper communication. So there's a real big communication going on right now within the locker room, within on the field, in the classrooms. And, you know, I know how he was going to get it fixed. Because once you notice, you just got to deal with it during the year. And I mean, that's how it is. But I don't see none of that at all. I'm more excited about, you know, just because we do got Fangio, somebody experienced, real, real good. I'm not saying that anything about, you know, the past, but it was just more like, you know, you could just tell that everybody's on the same page about stuff.
All right. I'm not even sure there's that much to interpret because it's pretty clear what he's saying.
Sean Desai and Matt Patricia, not good.
Yeah.
That's basically what BG is saying. And look, if we're misinterpreting that, I know Brandon listens to the show from time to time. Please correct us, BG, if we're wrong. But yeah. I think that's what he's saying.
Yeah, he's being polite enough not to say that those guys were inept or over their head or whatever. In the case of Patricia, who knows what?
But well, I think in the case of Patricia, he wanted you to win the stupid football bet and decided the best way to do that was to have Hassan Reddick drop into coverage.
Yeah, and it worked out well for everybody.
Yeah, didn't it, though?
But anyway, and now he likes the coaching staff, which is good.
Yeah, that is good. So? That is good. But the other thing that came out of this week, and we promised we'd touch on it very quickly, with respect to Jalen Hurts and what he said about Nick Sirianni. If you remember, Glenn, a similar incident, I guess you'd call it, happened last season after the Eagles lost to Seattle. Remember that game where Jalen Hurts threw the late interception, threw the ball deep to A.J. Brown? Turned out Jalen had called an audible. Nick Sirianni took all the blame for that publicly.
Mm-hmm. He did.
He took every bullet.
Yeah, it was my fault, my call, all that. Yeah.
And then A.J. eventually revealed that, oh no, Jalen had made the audible that led to the interception. Jalen never took a bullet for his coach in that entire aftermath. Never once said, you know what, Nick shouldn't be saying this. I'm the one who made the mistake.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little telling, I think.
Yeah, very good point. Very good point. 215-592-9494. Coming up, we're going to check in with Alex Coffey, talk some Phillies as they play in, 3 hours from now.
Yeah, about that.
In London. Nice. Mike Sielski, Glenn Mack now. A 94 WIP. Are you tired of dealing with those old inefficient windows in your house? Maybe it's time to Go Guida. What about that drafty, beat-up looking entry door you painted over more times than you can count? Go Guida. You know you need added protection from the elements with the new storm door. I got my storm door at Guida. Love it. Go Guida. Sliding patio door, garage door. Got to replace it. Go Guida. Whatever your home improvement needs are, I suggest you Go Guida with the great people at Guida Door and Window. To help get your project started, Guida is offering 20% off all windows and doors while allowing you to start your project interest-free with no money down. With no money down up to 3 full years to pay them off interest-free. That's right. Receive 20% instant savings with the luxury of paying off your project interest-free for up to 36 months. Restrictions apply. Offers for a limited time. So what are you waiting for? It's time you finally go Guida. Call today to schedule a free in-home estimate at 1-877-GO-GUIDA or visit them at goguida.com. That's go, G-U-I-D-A.com.
Yeah, me and Jess, we walked around for like 5 hours or so, just saw like all the local markets they have. Kind of, I like to see how like normal people live on the daily. That stuff is fun for me. So to be able to go through like their markets and the way they get food and stuff. And I got to see like kids come out, all of them dressed like in their Hogwarts uniforms. Hey, private school kids wear ties here.
I know.
Jackets and ties.
I commented that as I saw them walking in.
Wow. Now I pay $30,000 a year for a private school. All we get is an untucked collared shirt and khaki pants.
That's right.
Come on, man.
That was Nick Castellanos of the Phillies talking about his experience so far in London. Mike Sielski and Glenn Mack now here on WIP. I don't know. I think most private schools in the United States have their kids, male students, in shirts and ties, don't they, Glenn?
Some.
I don't know. When I went to Catholic school, grade school, I had the polo shirt and khakis, but I feel like more schools are stepping their game up. Anyway, the Phillies, of course, start their series against the Mets in London in a couple of hours. And joining us now to talk about the best team in baseball is the excellent, excellent Phillies beat writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer, my colleague and friend Alex Coffey. Hi, Alex. How you doing?
Good. How are you guys?
We're doing great. So we heard that sound from Nick Castellanos. He seems kind of, sort of, to be coming out of what's been a season-long slump. This seems to have been kind of an issue with him since he got to Philadelphia a couple of years ago. Based on what you have seen from him, especially lately, where is he at? Are we going to see the full version of Nick Castellanos that everyone wants to see, or is this going to continue to be hot and cold and wondering why, you know, he can't get his slugging percentage above 700?
Yeah, well, I don't think the streakiness is going anywhere. I think that's kind of embedded in his DNA. But, you know, we've had a couple of glimpses of the normal Nick Castellanos over the past few weeks, and people have questioned, is he getting out of this slump? And what I would say is what's encouraging is that he's hitting the ball a lot harder, like above average for his career numbers right now, and he's doing that consistently. And that's usually an indication that he's like, if the results are not showing that he's hitting the ball like right at guys, he's getting a little bit unlucky. So eventually his luck will turn, and it seems like it's starting to turn now. So I think that that's a promising sign, and people around the team think it's a promising sign that he's been like making better contact. So I would tentatively say yes, but of course I might get roasted for being wrong. So I'm reluctant to say anything definitively.
Well, streaky is exactly it. So yes. by the way, I will always respect Alex Coffey because on her Twitter page, there's a picture of Warren Zevon. And it's
Alex
gone long before she ever came around, and yet she respects that music. And so
Alex has impeccable taste in music.
I really admire that. Okay.
There's a real missed opportunity for Brandon Marsh, who did not go on this trip, to play Werewolves of London as his song.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. Oh, that would be so great.
Here's the thing, though, Alex. You need to get a member of the Phillies to use Roland the Headless Thompson Gunner as his walk-off song. That would be a true achievement.
Bring back Scott Roland, and then there you could do it.
There it is.
All right, enough of that. So Rob Thompson got some attention this week. It was his second anniversary since he got the job as the manager, and he's out in London yesterday hoisting beers with the fans in a London pub and so on. So I want to ask you, what makes this mild-mannered man so successful at the job? What is it that makes Rob Thompson a good and effective manager?
Yeah, I mean, I think for starters, his emotional intelligence is off the charts. He's just really good at reading people. He has a background in player development. I think that plays a big role in his ability to do that. But I also think it's just kind of how he's wired. He can get along with pretty much anyone. And obviously, when you're at this level, there are a lot of egos and big personalities, and he's able to kind of navigate that. I mean, you see the situation with Taiwan Walker during the offseason, where Walker was tweeting, I think he tweeted, like, the disrespect or something.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm paraphrasing. But,
by the way, didn't age well for Taiwan, but yes, you're right.
You know, and to his credit, Thompson talked to him during the offseason. They talked in spring training, and he quashed it immediately. And that's just kind of how he's wired. And then the other part of it, I think, is his ability to just keep an even keel. And it's a cliche, but with him, he really lives that. And it's effective because when they're, you know, 25 games above 500, he's not kicking his feet up and like saying great job, you know, like overreacting. He's kind of got a looking at the season in its full, in its entirety, in its full scope. And then on the flip side, when things aren't going so well, he's not panicking either. And the players really, really like that. So
I just want to say, we talked earlier about Charlie Manuel. And Charlie Manuel had that same, two of the things that she said, I think, apply to Charlie, the emotional intelligence.
Yep.
And also, Charlie managed a clubhouse of superstar players with big egos for a lot of years and never had that dissension, never had guys complaining they weren't playing enough or where they batted in the lineup, and Charlie knew how to go and talk to guys, and that's Rob Thompson.
Yeah, it is. And to follow up on that, Alex, to me the dynamic of this team is interesting because you have, as Glenn said, these veteran star players, guys like Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber, and even though he's been injured lately, Trey Turner. And then you have younger guys who are trying to make their mark in Major League Baseball, Alec Boehm, Bryson Stott, guys like that. You're in there a lot. How does that dynamic play out amongst the guys themselves? Because obviously Rob Thompson can't be there all the time to massage egos or quell disagreements, whatever. How does it play out amongst the guys themselves?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting because there is definitely a disparity in terms of salaries and different stages of guys' careers. But it's been really striking to see how unified everyone is and how cohesive the culture is in there. It's not like, you know, there's a language barrier, of course, but it's not like the Latin American players are only hanging out with each other and then the English speaking players are only hanging out with each other. Everyone kind of interacts and, you know, salary, things like that doesn't really come into play. One thing that I heard a couple of weeks ago from relief pitcher Jose Ruiz was that he felt he's kind of like this journeyman guy that they signed to a minor league deal in the off season. And he said that when he showed up in spring training, he was struck by how everyone got along. And it really didn't matter whether you were a star or whether you were, you know, someone who doesn't really have a guaranteed long-term spot on the big league roster. And he just felt very secure here. And I think that they make a concerted effort to have that feeling in the clubhouse. And I think it starts with guys like Schwarber. Harper's talked about that, how they want everyone to feel important in there. And, you know, they see it as something that will lead to their on-field success.
Hey, real small thing, and maybe it's nothing. I just saw a little bit ago that the Phillies added Rafael Marchand as an additional player for the London Series. He's a catcher. Mm-hmm. Please tell me not to infer from that JT Realmuto is hurt. I mean, he took some real bangs over the course of the last week. Does this relate to that, or they just want an extra catcher there to throw bullpen or something?
Yeah, I think it's just, I mean, he's really tough. He's in the lineup today. I don't think they would run him out there if there were any real concerns. I think it's just depth. So I wouldn't read too far into it, but they did say that they were happy that Realmuto got 3 off days in a row because he didn't play the last game in the States before coming over to London. So, listen,
you see him certainly way more often than we do, and he just seems like he's carrying on bumps and bruises and stuff, and he just keeps going.
Yeah. I mean, it's inherently a taxing position, you know, as is, and then you factor in the fact that, like, you're getting hit with foul tips and, like, baseball, you know, pitches and all this kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. I give him a lot of credit.
We're talking to Alex Coffey from the Philadelphia Inquirer, the terrific Phillies beat reporter. Alex, they just swept the Brewers, and if you want it to be dour, I suppose, you could look at it and say, well, they didn't hit very much. They won, mm-hmm. you know, 3-0, 2-1, 2-0. If you want to be an eternal optimist, you can say, well, they pitched great, and that's wonderful, and this team finds a way to win.
Yeah.
Is it? I mean, look, in the talk radio business, it's almost bad to have a team playing this well, because what are you going to complain about and discuss on the radio? But is there anything to the idea that, hey, they got to hit a little more, and that helped knock them out of the playoffs last year against the Diamondbacks? And if there's an Achilles heel with this team, it's like we talked about how streaky they can be.
Yeah, well, one thing I'd say is the Brewers have built their pitching staff on deception. They're like, you know, they throw a ton of different arm angles at you, a ton of different speeds, spins, pitch shapes. So, you know, on paper, obviously they were above 500 when they came into that series and they were a good opponent. But I think when you look under the hood a little bit, their pitching staff is particularly formidable just because of that. There's a lot of like unpredictability and it's hard for guys to find footing. So I think that they weren't obviously before that series, they weren't hitting the way that they were expected to. But I think that that like accentuated it a little bit. So I'm curious to see how they do against the Mets, which is not the same pitching staff as Brewers. That's not as much their ethos. But when I look back on that series, I mean, it's really just the pitching that sticks out to me, because the Brewers are a team that slugs. You know, mm-hmm. I think it was like the Phillies and the Brewers 1-2 for most like average runs per game in either the National League or MLB. I don't remember which one entering that series. So the fact that they were able to hold them to 7 runs over the course of 3 games is really impressive. And then, yeah, the hitting stuff, I mean, it's a thing, but I think context is important there too, and I'm curious to see how they do over the next few weeks.
All right, so let's take a look at the National League ERA leaders list. We got Ranger Suarez pitching today, ERA 1.70, Mike. I think that's good.
I think so.
Zach Wheeler, third, 2.23. He's got to go back to the All-Star game again this year. Christopher Sanchez at 271 ranks fifth. Didn't see that coming.
The best number 4 starter in baseball.
And Aaron Nola at 277. I may ask you about Nola again in a minute, but that does not mention, of course, Taijuan Walker, who has just been terrible. And I keep thinking, well, the next start's the one he's going to get it right. And he didn't against the Cardinals last Sunday. I don't know, what, he last 4 innings? I don't remember. Not long. They have been able to stick with him because the others have all been so good and the bullpen mm-hmm. has been so good. But we all know there's another guy who started early in the season and did a really good job. Do you get, or I guess my question is, how long will they stick with Taijuan Walker?
I mean, it's a great question, and I honestly do not know. We asked, I don't remember who asked, someone asked Robin Scrum a couple days ago about, like basically that question, like how long he would, you know, is he considering other options? Where is he at with Taijuan right now? And he shut it down immediately and said that he trusts him and he thinks that's premature. So that is the latest we heard on that.
Right, which is probably what they'll say until the very moment they decide to make the
right
move. Right.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's a tough, you know, it's particularly tough because you've got Spencer Turnbull sitting in the bullpen, but they also signed this guy to a massive contract, and I think they want to see, you know, what he is. And he isn't a guy that has extensive bullpen experience, you know, like this is his role. So transitioning him to that if they needed to would be difficult, I think. I mean, it's like a completely different pregame routine. You're pitching every five, you go from pitching every 5 days to pitching, you know, not having much notice at all and not having a lot of time to warm up and get hot and things like that. So, and the reason we know how tricky a transition that is because Spencer Turnbull just made that transition.
Right.
Yeah.
He talked about how difficult it is. So I think that they're going to give it time and see what they have, but you're right. I mean, he has struggled. His splitter, which is supposed to be his best weapon, has not looked as sharp as it normally does or it did last year. And because of that, he hasn't been throwing it as much and his outings haven't been as strong because of that. So I think that that's the key for him is figuring out, you know, the splitter and fixing it and just getting it back to what it was. But obviously there are a bunch of issues with him.
Alex, Glenn mentioned Aaron Nola, who obviously mm-hmm. pitched a great game against the Brewers his last time out. Mm-hmm. What is the biggest difference between Aaron Nola this season and last season? Is it the security of the contract? Is it getting used to the pitch clock? As
yes.
Glenn points at me and
that's
says,
"That's what
yes.
it is." It was last year. I'm sorry, I don't mean to jump on the answer.
That's okay. I was asking Alex.
I know, but
feel free to answer yourself.
Opine and give Alex all the time she needs. I believe that it was last year when somebody got on base. Nola, prior to that,
freaked out.
Would just in years prior, he would just freeze and slow the game down. And when he couldn't do that last year, it took him till whatever, September to adjust, and now he's adjusted. Alex, you can tell Mike I'm correct.
Yeah. He is correct.
Alex, you're letting me down here.
Aha.
He had during spring training, Nola mentioned that he had this conversation with Caleb Cotham just about his delivery. They made a tweak to his delivery after a start in St. Louis in September, and he noticed that he was kind of like stepping across his body a little bit. So basically they had him like square his shoulders up more towards like the pitch clock that he like sees when he's on the mound. And that helped with his command, and it also like helped him keep an eye on the pitch clock, which was like a win-win for them. But yeah, I think like there's the tweak to the delivery. There's like his ability to get, you know, he feels a little bit more comfortable and on pace with it now. Obviously he doesn't have to worry about, you know, where he's going to live, what his like future looks like in the next few years, because he just signed a long-term deal. So I think it's kind of the combination of all those things. He's been working with Cotham and Brian Kaplan for a long time, so there's that familiarity too. So yeah, I think it's kind of a little bit of everything.
When does Caleb Cotham become a folk hero in this town? Because Mike and I talked about this last week. He could walk down Broad Street and nobody would be able to identify who he is. He's as low profile as can be. And, you know, we're reading the stats of the starters. We haven't gotten to the bullpen, which has been great. He's got to get a ton of credit for that. And
nobody
knows who he is. You could ask most fans. They don't even know who the pitching coach of the Phillies is.
Yeah. I think when Taiwan Walker joins his rotation mates with a sub-3 ERA, that's when
people reach. So you're saying never.
I'm kidding. I don't know. I really don't know how he's been able to kind of keep a low profile. That's a good question. Because I feel like, you know, this fan base is so plugged into everything that it is a little bit surprising that he isn't more well-known.
Well, what's he like?
He is really good at boiling down like complex concepts, like, you know, physics into more like relatable terms. Like, I think that's one of his greatest assets is just him as a teacher. He's just really good at like simplifying things and, you know, making it easy for anyone to understand, myself included. I always like tell him to explain things to me like I'm 5, because these are not the easiest concepts that he's talking about. So I think that's the biggest thing that sticks out to me is just his ability to do that.
Alex Coffey, you're not in London, so what are you going to be doing while the Phils are across the pond?
I am going to be watching the game from Sea Isle.
Nice.
And, yep. And I'm also in the process of moving, which I do not recommend moving during the regular season. That was a big mistake on my part. So I'm also going to be looking for apartments.
Yeah, well, you only get like a day here or a day there, you know, to do laundry or get your car serviced, let alone relocate.
Move. Yeah.
So good luck with that. Enjoy Sea Isle. And thanks so much for the insight. We really appreciate it very much.
Yep. Thanks, guys. Have a good
one. Hey, be well. Thank you.
Right.
Bye. Yeah, Alex does an excellent, excellent job covering the Phils. And as I said, she's only about, I don't want to guess how old she is. I think she's in her early 30s, maybe her late 20s. But mm-hmm. Glenn, the music taste.
Love it.
I mean,
admire it. Raised well.
Yeah. Warren Zevon, the Moody Blues, Springsteen.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
best
all
music
the classics.
Ever. That's right.
Yeah.
So there's a guy, we got to hit a break, but I'll get you real fast. There's a guy who posts on Twitter occasionally. This week in music top 20s.
Yes.
And he goes all different years.
Mm-hmm.
And I will occasionally respond and say, okay, this week the five best songs were that and the three stinkers were this. Yesterday was, I think, from 1970. It was like unbelievable, great songs. And I know that everybody believes that the best music, the best cars, the best TV, the best everything was like when you were growing up.
Sure.
They actually just did a study on this, like what was the best time for America? And most people said it's like when they were growing up.
When they were 9 years old.
Yeah, because you don't know the problems. You just know that you can go to the playground and play.
Right.
I honestly do believe, and you cannot persuade, I'm not going to tell you that the best time in America was when I was a kid, because America had a lot of issues when I was a kid. People were getting assassinated and we were in a war and all that stuff. And I couldn't even tell you about cars, and television was awful back then. It was the Beverly Hillbillies, for God's sakes.
A funny show.
Much better now. But I will argue to my death that the greatest music of the last 75 years was everything between the years 1968 and 1975.
Wow.
And I am sticking with that.
Okay, 68 to 75.
Yes, there was the greatest music of all of, I mean, I can't argue, you know, Beethoven, but the greatest music of since people actually like listened on radios.
The Beatles getting experimental.
Yep.
You know.
Hendrix. The Motown stuff out of that age was amazing. The whole British invasion was still going on.
The rise of Philadelphia soul.
It was great. Yeah. That was the greatest music ever, and everything since then has been nonsense.
It's a very specific 7-year window, too.
Well, it's because when I was,
No, I know.
It was when I was a teenager.
It's not like you said the 60s or the 70s. It's 68, 75.
The early 60s were like, you know, and the early Beatles stuff was good, but it was like really pop stuff. It's when the Beatles started to change, like Revolver into Rubber Soul,
towards
into
the
Revolver,
end, yeah.
Into Sgt. Pepper's, okay?
So
and then all that. The Motown stuff was unbelievable.
It was. So I was born in 1975.
Oh,
so
sorry, buddy.
It's good to know that between the music and
the best
Flyers,
years were the 7 years before you came around.
Yeah, exactly. Everything's been downhill since I showed up.
That was it. And by the way, people know I'm right.
You've been dropping that quite a bit on this show today. Coming up, we're going to do what we're watching. We're going to talk to Phil Martelli about all different kinds of things. And we have leading off, heading into Phil's Mets at 10 after 1 this afternoon with Glenn Macnow. I am Mike Sielski. Dan Wilson producing on 94 WIP.
All right, what we're watching, sponsored by Guided Door and Window. Receive 20% off all windows and doors with no money down. Up to 3 years to pay it off interest-free. Call Guided Door and Window today at 1-877-GO-GUIDE or visit them at goguida.com. I watch nothing.
I watched the E60 documentary, No Easy Victories.
Which was on as we're doing the show.
It is. It's about the 1994 New York Rangers, their run to the Stanley Cup, and the team's relationship with a New York City cop named Stephen McDonald, who was shot in the early 1990s. He had been a gigantic Rangers fan, remained a gigantic Rangers fan, and became the emotional touchstone for that team. It's Jeremy Schapp. It's an hour-long ESPN documentary. Everything Jeremy does is excellent.
Yeah, he's great.
And this was very, very good. I found myself wishing it was even longer, because they could have gone into more depth about the team, about Mike Keenan, about Mark Messier, and even more about the relationship between Stephen McDonald and the team. If you get a chance to check it out, watch No Easy Victory. Should be streaming wherever you get ESPN. Now, we are up against a tight break here, Glenn.
Yeah.
But you and I have to settle a controversy between us. over the movie Unfrosted, the Jeremy Seinfeld Netflix film about Pop-Tarts.
A laugher.
You loved it. I gave it 10 minutes last week. Turned it off.
A lot of effort there.
Gave it another 10 minutes the other day.
Yeah, don't turn it off. Don't overextend yourself.
Did you watch the next 10 minutes or did you rewatch the first 10?
I watched the next 10 minutes.
So you're watching this in 10-minute increments here.
I've watched 20 minutes of this film and I haven't laughed yet. And I wanted to laugh. The point being, Dan Buzz Wilson was going to break the tie for us by watching the movie from beginning to end and weighing in.
And I really admire Dan Wilson for his taste and intellect.
Dan, the floor is yours.
Well, we all know Glenn thinks I have a big brain, too, so we're going to add that on there, too. No, it's exactly what I expected. I will say that I don't think I laughed maybe the way that Glenn did, because I probably didn't pick up on a lot of the references. I obviously grew up in a very different time. But I did, like, I went into it, and it was exactly what I expected in the sense that it was references from the 60s of two cereal companies going back and forth, and I found it funny when they would say things that were clearly like supposed to be out of date. Like, I'm trying to think of a good example of this, but something to the effect of like, wow, I can't imagine that like there would ever be a problem with President Kennedy or something to that effect. It was exactly what I expected. It wasn't something that
did
got
you
me to
like
laugh.
It?
Yes, I liked it.
He liked it. The tie is broken. Dan Wilson, the big brain, comes through one more time. Mike, you're out.
I have never been around two people who have been more wrong about something in their lives.
No, we agreed that he would break the tie, and we would follow his guidance.
It's not an Oscar winner, but you can't go in with that mindset.
I didn't go in with that mindset. I went in with the mindset to laugh, and I did not laugh. That's the only mindset.
It is a breakaway from Jerry Seinfeld's usual brand of comedy.
You're the odd one out at this point,
apparently,
Mike.
Apparently I am. All right, we're up against a break.
Thank you, Dan. Nice work.
We got our Cooper Doc segment. We got Phil Martelli. We can take your calls at 215-592-9494. Glenn Macnow and Dan Wilson, wrong, and Mike Sielski on 94 WIP.
Yeah, you know what's right? What's right is getting rid of those old inefficient windows in your house with Gaida Door and Window. You've got drafty-looking entry door. Beat up entry door, you painted over it so many times, go Gaida. You need added protection from the elements with a new storm door, go Gaida. You got a sliding patio door, garage door. It's not looking very good. Go Gaida. Whatever your home improvement needs are, I suggest you go Gaida. People at Gaida Door and Window, they are terrific. And to help you get your project started, Gaida is offering 20% off all windows and doors while allowing you to start your project with no money down, up to 3 full years to pay them off interest free. Yep. Receive 20% instant savings with the luxury of paying off your project interest-free for up to 36 months. Restrictions apply. Offers for a limited time only. So what are you waiting for? It's time you finally go Gaida. Call today. Schedule a free in-home estimate at 1-877-GO-GUIDA or visit them at GoGuida.com. That's Go, G-U-I-D-A.com.
I mean, I've been saying this all year. We got guys that come and step up. And, you know, Pache and I have been sharing the left field spot, and he's going to come up big for us here. And, you know, I'm excited to see what he's going to bring to the table this next week or two, and everybody is.
That was Phillies outfielder Brandon Marsh talking about having to go on the injured list with his hamstring injury, and coming up in a minute, we'll talk to our friends at Cooper Bone and Joint.
He's a great teammate, by the way, Marsh. Because I mean, for a lot of reasons, but he's always the guy spilling water on guys at the end of the games and all that nonsense that they do. But he's a guy who I imagine wants to play every day. He's a young player who's looking to establish a career. His batting average against lefties is atrocious, so it's kind of hard to make the case.
Yeah.
But to me, I've always been of the mind, like, you give him more opportunity to do it, maybe he will do it. And when he's and I appreciate that he says everybody's looking forward to watching Pache.
Not really.
Not so much.
No, really not. And we talked about it with Alex Coffey, Glenn, but that is the area of the team, if you're going to focus on any one thing, that to me is the most worrisome. Like, I really feel like they need a right-handed bat on the bench. Mm-hmm. And I hope, if I were a Phillies fan, I would hope that Dave Dombrowski will prioritize that. Yeah, they're going to need bullpen help. But, you know, Sir Anthony Dominguez may start pitching better.
And he has. Mm-hmm.
And Soto can start pitching better. We'll see. But they don't have very many good options on the bench right now. And that leads us to, as I said, our Cooper Bone Joint segment with Dr. Mark Pollard. Hi, Dr. Pollard. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
All right.
We're doing well. So Brandon Marsh of the Phillies is on the injured list. I almost said disabled list, but we're not allowed to say that anymore. The injured list with a hamstring injury. Is there anything that Marsh can do to get back in the lineup and get healthy other than rest a strained hamstring?
Yeah, I mean, rest is really the key thing, and it's always a delicate balancing act when somebody has an injury like this between trying to, you know, get back sooner, but also the muscle can withstand the force that's put to it. You know, we've all heard when people have had these hamstring injuries and they have setbacks. I think, and didn't Turner have a little bit of a setback with his?
Yes, he did.
Oh, yeah, still not back.
And so that's kind of the danger. So, you know, I guess positive thoughts and good hope. And, you know, hopefully they're able to figure out exactly what the right timeline is going to be as far as getting him back soon enough, but not too soon.
So, Dr. Mark Pollard, given the fact that no other Phillies players are really suffering any big injuries, that's all we've got for you this week. Right. Thanks very much.
We're delighted to make it quick because they're all healthy. So,
well, that's good.
There will be those times.
Yeah. You'll pay it back to us on another Saturday morning.
I have no doubt.
All right.
Be well.
Thanks, Dr. Pollard. Appreciate it. Glenn, Mike from Yardley wants to weigh in on the Phillies, and he apparently has some advice for me.
Oh, good.
When you leave.
Oh, good.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I'll congratulate you later, Glenn. You stole a little bit of time.
Appreciate it. No rush.
I hear everybody hand-wringing over the Phillies, and my feeling right now is it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, making a move may have some negative impact on the chemistry of the team. It doesn't need to be done now. I think we just be patient.
Agreed.
Yeah. The trade deadline's several weeks away. They've got time.
Exactly. Now, I was inspired to call because of Glenn's segment on great players and people that he's encountered and bad ones that he's encountered. And I'll dispense very quickly with trying to go through my Charles Barkley story, but he once helped my daughter under very difficult circumstances, and he could not have been more gracious and helpful.
Great guy.
He is absolutely my favorite Philadelphia 76er of all time because of that. But Lenny Dykstra was a real jerk, and I remember the story of how he stiffed Ray.
Yes, and he did. Ray wrote some articles for a magazine Lenny was doing. Lenny never paid him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mike, I hate to do this to you because your stories are great, but we got Phil Martelli on hold. So give us quickly what Mike needs to know.
Mike needs to save two things. One, Roy Dittinger. I'd love to see Roy come back, but I don't know how we can do that. But the second thing is twice every football season I get Dallas Hatred Day, and Glenn, you are the patron saint of Dallas Hatred Day, and it needs to come back. So if you bring Glenn back for anything at all, it's Dallas week.
You got it, Mike. Right? I make a promise and pledge to you right now that if we take the time to rip the Cowboys up and down, Glenn, you'll be at the center of it.
I'm always ready for that.
All right, very good. Now on the line, we have friend of the show, former head coach at St. Joseph's University, former assistant coach at the University of Michigan, passionate Philadelphia fan.
Yeah, he'll rip Dallas for you anytime.
Man about town, our friend Phil Martelli. Hey, Phil.
Mike and Glenn, how are you guys?
All right.
We're doing great. We wanted to pick your brain on several different topics because there's, you know, a fair amount going on both locally and nationally in sports and going on in areas that aren't often touched on talk radio. So we'll get the local out of the way first. Know how closely you follow the Phillies. You're watching maybe the best Phillies team in a decade. As somebody who has coached at a high level, what are you seeing from the team, both from its performance on the field and the way that Rob Thompson and his staff are kind of handling the clubhouse and the success and all of that stuff?
This, to me, is a masterclass. This is a masterclass in how to be a team, and I will take everybody back to last Monday night and who they are. And how come they're so easy to root for is not the results, but the fact that their teammate, Rhys Hoskins, came to bat and the The camera pans to the bench, and his teammates are cheering for him on the field. You know, arguably one of the best players in baseball, Bryce Harper, is clapping. Stop. Stop it right now. Stop right now. Right now, driving on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, it gives me chills. And no team and no fan base is going to deserve what they're going to get. We're going to get a parade in November. We are getting a parade.
Well, I love that.
And it's because of the team that they are. And I'll take you back to an inconsequential event. I just had a conversation with Jay Wright about this. Jay and Fran Dunphy and I were invited to the night they honored Dan Baker 50 years as the public address announcer. We were sitting in the home plate area. Dan was addressing. I turned to my right, and the entire team was on the front, on the top step, led by Harper, and they were there to honor that Dan Baker. They could have, they're entitled, like these athletes we know, could stay in the clubhouse and the whole bit. And I remember saying to Jay, you know what? They deserve every success. And Rob Thompson, I mean, come on. Like, Passyunk Avenue in London, and he shows up. And this is just... Now, I will admit, the first ball that's thrown today, I'm going to want them to cut the guy. You know, like I... you know, first
pitch out of the strike zone, you don't want Ranger out of here?
No, I like, come on. But get somebody up. Come on, please. Yeah. Every pitch, I'm telling you, it's agony. It's agony. But man, are they are just they are the epitome of a team.
I want to ask you. You mentioned Rob Thompson, who's having a grand old time in London, going to pubs with the fans. But you're a guy who coached teams and coached very successfully. And we were talking earlier about kind of his emotional intelligence and also how, particularly Major League Baseball, you've got to connect with a clubhouse full of very highly paid, high ego, high achievers. As a guy who's been in the position of coaching teams and coaching some real star players, if you would, kind of your perspective on what you see there and what the role of a manager or coach is in dealing with a clubhouse full of stars.
I think that you have to be consistent day after day. It could be an off day. It could be a win. It could be a big win. It could be a loss. It could be, they've had spectacular wins. And despite the fact that, Glenn and Mike, you'll appreciate this, no athlete in the history of sport has ever read anything written about them, which is complete nonsense. They read everything that's written
about course.
Them.
Yep.
And in today's world, they, whatever you do, Google it or whatever, however you find out. His nuggets, like the things that he drops in his press conferences, I mean, who listening, and I don't mean this, I mean this respectfully, who listening believes that Whit Merrifield needs another at-bat? Like, we've all decided, okay? Like, if he wants to be the 25th man, leave him there. But what's he say last week? He just needs more at-bats to get going. It's his connection, it's not a word, but his sameness every single day and saying, I'm not worried about them peaking too soon. Only in Philadelphia would we worry about that. We wouldn't celebrate.
Got to worry about something.
19. You know, I heard the previous caller saying, wringing their hands. What did I miss? I was out of town for 2 days. What, we're wringing our hands over what? Like, picking a guy up for AAA or something? I don't even know what we would be wringing our hands about.
They don't hit enough, Phil. They don't score runs unless they hit home runs.
Yeah. Well, pay attention. It's going to be all right.
We're talking to Phil Martelli, former head coach at St. Joseph's University. And Phil, one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on today was because of the Caitlin Clark story. And Glenn and I have been talking about it for the first hour and a half today, and it's become obviously a huge national topic. And you have some insight here. Your wife, Judy, you know, played and won national championships at Immaculata. You've been around college basketball and professional basketball for a long, long time. There's a lot going on with the Caitlin Clark situation. Is there one aspect of it that from what you've seen and read and heard, that people are really missing, that there's a big component to this story that people aren't picking up on?
I think that there's two, Mike, to me. One is, let's go glass, not just half full, overflowing. How this kid and the crew, the team around her has managed this last year. It's not just since she's been in the WNBA. She hasn't made a left turn. She got a little bit wound up in the NCAA tournament with the officiating, and she seems to have a little bit of a bark in the WNBA, a couple technical fouls and everything like that. But go back and look at every single statement this kid has made to the print media, to the internet, to all of these interviews. This kid is an absolute certifiable superstar. Forget her play. Like, if she's going to be the spokesperson for women's basketball going forward, they are in an unbelievable place. Her maturity is, to me, is off the charts, and it's not phony. So when I say, like, her team has surrounded her, that they have taught her, and again, this is just absolutely extraordinary about promoting a wholesome brand for women's basketball. And if she is the face going forward, they're really in a great place.
Okay, so however,
the second thing for me is this. She needs to catch a break, and all these kids in that league catch a break, right? She finished playing college basketball, very intense college basketball, on April the 5th, and she was a pro a month later, and she entered a league where there's some animosity.
Yep.
But I'll go back for the old-timers and say, when Pete Maravich came out of college and went into the old NBA, where it was physical as heck anyway, and he went in and everybody was saying, well, he averaged 40 a game. Well, the old pros were not going to allow him to score 40 a game. And they were going to knock him on his backside every single time. And they were going to and this is when it was legal in that league to be physical. I think that she's getting treated as a rookie gets treated who comes in with all of this hype. And I don't think that it's mean-spirited. I think it's more initiation. And I absolutely, positively refuse to consider it being a racial issue.
Yeah. We saw earlier, we talked about there's a highlight of Michael Jordan going up for his first dunk in the NBA, and Jeff Rulin sending him flying. And so we agree that it's the same kind of thing. And Mike made a point, I'll speak for you both in his column and on the air, which is that people who are aghast by this kind of thing are people who regularly don't watch sports, who just kind of tuned in because of this, and so they're shocked by it. Let me change the subject one more time and ask you about this. The Lakers are looking to hire a coach. Presumably LeBron is coming back. He's laughing already. We heard early in the week it was going to be J.J. Redick, mm-hmm. the analyst, the former player. Now it looks like they're preparing a huge offer for Dan Hurley, the championship coach at UConn. Do you think Dan Hurley should take the job? And if he did, how do you think he would do?
Wow. I don't know if I have an opinion on whether he should or he shouldn't. I know Danny. Those numbers that they're talking about are not, they're not just earth-shattering.
Yes.
You know, it's not like, well, this is going to change his children or his grandchildren. Like, of course it is.
Yeah.
But here's what I've always felt about that league. You can run around and say you're the coach, right? And obviously we've had legendary high school coaches in Philadelphia, and you say, well, they could coach any level. And, yeah, that's probably true. But when you get from college to professional, it's not, it's like comparing softball and baseball. It's They might have some of the similar rules, but it's not the same game. And with all that he pours into it, with all that he pours into 40 games a year, to say that you're going to do that 120 games a year, I don't know. I don't know if his personality, I don't know if his physical fitness, I just don't know. Mm-hmm. Mm. That's a negative for taking a job. The positive is that with the new rules in college basketball, and as a recent retired guy, I could say this, I don't know how we're going to avoid these guys from burning out.
Yeah.
I know for a fact that we have local coaches in Philadelphia who have not had a day off since Christmas. That's not healthy. It's just not healthy. And unless they announce pay for play and keep it at that, and there's a salary cap, and you're going to say, well, that sounds like professional basketball. Again,
it is.
Professional basketball does not have tampering. They have restrictions. When's the last time when's the last time anybody saw or thought of Nick Nurse? He is off. He is with his family, and he's doing things that are normal in college basketball today. For Danny Hurley, there are no days off. So you might say quality of life. I would say yeah. And anybody that thinks like, oh well, so much travel, nonsense.
Yeah,
they charter everywhere.
Right.
They charter everywhere and they stay at 5-star hotel. And most times on a road trip, you're home the night of the game anyway.
Yep. Yeah.
It's not with all that travel.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough call for him, I think, Phil, because he has a chance to be the king of college basketball if he isn't already. But, man, that money is going to be hard to turn down. Phil Martelli, we thank you so much for your time. Always appreciate the insights. We'll have you on again soon. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for including me. Glenn, I appreciate you. Not because you're a professional, but because you're a friend. That means more to me than you being a professional. Thank you, Glenn.
Hey, you and I go back a long way, and I how much respect I have for you, my friend.
Thank you.
All right,
Mike,
be well.
Good luck.
All right, thanks, Phil. Appreciate it.
Great guy.
Always good stuff from Phil.
No, he's like,
I like getting him on a lot of different topics.
Smart guy.
Yeah, because he's gonna say something like he just did about Hurley, kind of frame things in a way you hadn't thought of before. And the mental health aspect of college coaching is one that a lot of people don't talk about.
That system is so broken now that with no guardrails and guys can, listen, we've always thought that players in college basketball should get paid, college sports should get paid. But now, where they can just go to a new team every year and they can get recruited. It's like there's no barriers at all, and it's all going to be broken until they figure out, and then they'll fix it. Hey, one thing I wanted to bring up, we got just a couple minutes before we got to go to the Phillips pregame leading off. Mm-hmm. One thing I wanted to bring up, which is, I don't know how big a story this week. It came out, I think it was the Business Journal maybe reported it, that Jeff Lurie is looking to sell minority ownership of the team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good for $5,000.
I got 50 cents in my pocket right now. That's about all.
You got to get a little more. If a bunch of us get together and get $5,000, we could we'll bring them like a real offer.
We can bring the Kelly Green jerseys back forever.
There you go.
It'll be Konchak and Brewing Beer throughout Lincoln
Exclusive.
Financial Field.
Everybody else is out. Miller Lite, you may have the National Football League sponsorship. You're out. So why would you do it? What he has said is that you get no say in running the team, right? Mm-hmm. You just get a little bit of a stake.
You get the ego boost of being a rich person who now is able to call himself or herself an NFL owner.
Right. Good parking space.
Yep. And no matter what you pay, you're probably going to make money. No matter what the cost is to buy in, it's worth the investment. I mean, Lurie himself bought the Eagles for what? It was $190 million.
It's worth $7.5 billion
today. Oh, so even if you buy in a share for $1 billion, yeah, you're going to make money.
And so, I mean, I can't interpret what Lurie is thinking, nor has he said it, but he's looking for a little cash.
Yeah, sounds that way. Sounds that way. It'll be interesting. I mean, look, Michael Rubin was a minority owner with the Sixers and turned that into being the guy who gets to hang with the celebrities and responsible for making lousy uniforms.
Right. The company that never can deliver uniforms on time or correctly.
No.
You know who put out, he said, Jeff, DM me, I'm in, is Rob McElhenney.
Yeah.
Right? The gang buys the Eagles.
Can you imagine? Oh, my gosh.
Listen, that Wrexham thing that he's done.
It's remarkable.
It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is, but you know, I wouldn't look forward to Danny DeVito being the in-game host for Eagles games, would you?
No, I would not. But if I'm Lurie, I would take that seriously and get him in for a little bit because he is such a popular guy. You get him at the games, you get him doing a little bit of stuff. He's really good for the image.
Hey, that's sports nowadays. Can you get connected to other celebrities?
Yep.
Taylor Swift, Rob McElhenney, doesn't matter who you are.
Yeah.
Anyway, coming up, we've got Leading Off, taking you into Phillies Mets this afternoon. Who are the pitchers today? Ranger Suarez. Mm-hmm. And
Sean Manea.
That's right. Yep. So,
and we will take calls during that, 215-592-9494. So before we just go to it, this is your first time doing a pregame show, right? A leading
yes,
off?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. And once I leave, you're going to end up doing these occasionally.
I'm going to sit back today and watch
Right, so I'm going to lead. But what I've said is we do get calls during that. We welcome calls during that. And there's one caller consistently calls only leading off. Never calls any other time, any other show, but he's Mr. Leading Off. Will he call today, Dan Wilson?
I mean, if he can't miss this. This is a big game. London series?
Yeah.
You've called him out. If he doesn't call now, I'm
are we allowed to mention him by name, or is this a tease?
No, I want to see if he does. I mean, I don't want to mention him.
This guy's like Cal Ripken. He's Mr. Consistency. he doesn't miss a start.
Yes, and we'll bring you all kinds of good salient information as the Phillies take on the Mets in London. Mike Sielski, Glenn Mack now, 94 WIP.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.